could you describe what the conditions or what the scene was like where you were working?
Sure. So picture this. So Fort Bliss has no trees. Picture shrubs that were pulled out of the ground, bulldozed over, flattened, and erecting tents the size of a football field or more, and then attaching major conduction or conduction, like air conduction generators, into those tents to provide fresh air all the time, putting in those tents 1,000 bunk beds, and then filling those bunk beds with kids. And that's what Fort Bliss was like. It was an emergency situation where there were more and more kids coming every day, and they can't, due to law, they cannot stay at the U.S. border for more than, I think, 14 days. It might even be less than that. So these were temporary situations where getting the children to a safe place, providing food, and then they would in turn be given a case manager to help them find their families in the United States. So no shade, 100 degrees, dusty, windy, no life other than human life. I mean, there was not a stitch of green anywhere in the camp except in the salad. You know, that was a real hard thing. And I can't imagine how it felt for them coming from some of the beautiful areas that they live as well in Central America and going to that.
Maybe describe, just walk me through your contact with one child, basically.
Sure. So let's see, a child comes off the bus with a mask, with a just a the kind of mask that you see at the hospital, just the blue masks. So they're given those, and they have nothing in their hands. Everything was taken from them, of course, cataloged later. But basically, they come into empty-handed, empty pockets, and sometimes new clothes. They come into the tent that we called intake. They stand in line, and they get used to standing in lines because they're with the kids that were on the bus with them throughout this whole time. They go through a whole process of initiation into the health system. They get tested for COVID. They get vaccinated for measles, rubella, and mumps, I believe. They don't get vaccinated for COVID, but they do get tested. If they are positive for COVID at that point, they get put into a different tent, a COVID tent. But that's not to say that they could have spread it somehow on the bus as well. But if they are negative at that point, or I'm sorry, if they're positive at that point, they get taken away immediately for health treatment. Then they go through another section where we start looking at their what they have as far as their possessions. And that's where I came in, as well as getting their first contact of who do they want to contact the United States? Who do they want to contact in Guatemala or their country where they came from? Because as part of the deal, the children get 2 phone calls per week to talk to their families in the United States and or Guatemala or wherever they're from. And that's to help initiate that connection with their sponsors and also to ease the fears of their families in the country they came from, if they can reach them, to know that they're okay. Can you imagine sending your child, or not even sending your child, just having your child go somewhere and not know how they are after some time? So I was actually physically talking to, I'd probably say 500 kids over the course of my being there, asking them, well, first welcoming them. You know, they're totally traumatized what they just went through. And so to try to create an atmosphere of safety, security, you know, a friendly atmosphere, as much as you can say in a place like that where there wasn't a stitch of green, but the fact that we're to help them reach their families. And so I felt honored to be able to talk to them and give them that security, but also ask them how they're doing, if they have their phone number. And this is so amazing, Joe. These kids, they had little pieces of paper rolled up in their cuff of their shirt or hidden in their little pocket of their pants, like of the phone number of their grandmother in Guatemala that they couldn't memorize, say, or they had it as an extra little security thing. So, you know, they memorized numbers, but sometimes they had these little pieces of paper that made it all the way across. And some of them were laminated. Some of them were laminated with pieces of tape so they wouldn't get ruined. And, you know, so the thought process of, and to think that someone wrote that number down for them, someone who loved them from somewhere else, and they carried that all the way with them. So what my goal was to make sure that all those things that were part of their crossing was saved. And so we had these bags that we put everything in that came with them. Now they didn't have them, they got them taken from them on the bus, but then it was reacquainted with them once they came to our station. And I would go through all the things that they had everything stripped from them. They couldn't carry anything that had any metal, any paperwork. It was just, everything was going to be saved for them when they got released. So I wanted to make sure everything that they may have had something still in their pocket was all saved in this container. So then, you know, this is part of their history now in the United States. They are now going to live here probably for the rest of their lives. And so this is a time where, you know, these memories that they make in this process are something they'll tell their grandchildren.
Yeah, well, it's good you used their transition and made that quicker.
Hopefully. I'm just going to tell you this. I know that you have short time, but we met the man who ran the whole camp, and he was Honduran, I think. And he was a contractor, but he told us that this was really interesting. And it really struck me that I remembered for my whole time, and that we are part of their immigration journey, us that are working in the camp, and everything we do will have an impact in them, whether it be a smile to them, a fist bump when they walk by, because there was, you know, a lot of that, like friendliness and showing welcoming to our country, because they'll remember this the rest of their life. And it's nice to think that you were a part of that, to give them that welcome, even though under not the best of circumstances. And of course, you much rather have them be at home in their own country, but for many reasons, they're here now. And so we may make the best of it for them. And, you know, and we're all humans. So that really struck me and really helped guide me through my whole time of, you know, interacting with these kids.
Will you do it again?
I think I would. Now that I know a lot more of what to expect, I had no idea what to expect. And there was a little bit of chaos when I first got there. I felt, oh my gosh, you know, we're also used to orderly systems somewhat. And it seemed orderly until you really got into it. And then there was all these really weird things that would go on. And it was because they told us that we're building the plane while we're flying it. So if you have any suggestions, wait about 2 weeks, then let us know. They don't want the know-it-alls to show up and start, you know, telling them better ways to do things until they've been there a while. I love that. So I took that to heed, didn't say anything, but because I knew, you know, it's a huge operation, and I'm just one person in this whole thing. So there were probably 500 workers there at Fort Bliss, and then, like I said, 4,000, almost 5,000 kids. They also wanted to have one worker, like one adult per 15 kids. Like that was sort of the ratio that they were hoping for to keep things in control. That was the goal. So then they could, you know, have better accountability, more personal contact with each child, keeping tabs on everyone. Because you hear the stories in the news, you heard horrible stories about Fort Bliss. And I can attest that I think all of them are probably true that happened there in the news, but they made it sound like it was like pervasive. So I know that 4,800 kids, there's probably a few that slept through the cracks and things delayed on their sponsorship, or maybe they did get a bad deal at some point during their time there, which is really, really unfortunate. But I don't think that was the case for all the kids. It was just, you know, isolated incidences that kind of makes sense when you have 4,800 or more children and you're in this temporary situation, that stuff's going to happen.